listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 256 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week, because it's been a while since we've managed to do an episode because of illness and technology.
And Christmas.
And New Year's. Happy New Year, by the way. We just want to catch up on what everyone's been up to. New Year was great in this household.
This is a sarcastic great.
Yeah, it's a very sarcastic great. Food poisoning started New Year's Eve. Fun.
Started the year by shitting into a bucket. Well, not really.
No, it was all puking into the bucket. The shit was going elsewhere.
Shit was going all over the floor.
It's a good thing this podcast is rated explicit on iTunes and Apple Podcasts and whatnot.
And the year didn't get any better.
It's early days.
Yeah, that's fair. To be fair, I think we're mostly over the food poisoning now. So
yeah, just not.
I think so far, 2020 has just been one big Monday.
It's a very big Monday.
To be honest, I mean, because, you know, 2019 was like 2018 part two, and kind of going on and recurring. By this point, I think we're like 2016 part five or something.
It's a really bad series of sequels, and I feel like at some point we need a reboot, but I get the feeling we're not going to get the reboot we deserve, guys.
No, this just feels like a complete mess made of other parts.
Well, I mean, to be honest, if it was a reboot done by J.J. Abrams, then, nothing will make sense. So, come on.
Yeah, okay.
Nothing will make sense because it's J.J. Abrams.
Oh, man.
So needs more lens flare.
So we're going to start off by specifically talking about Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, the ninth iteration of this main film saga.
I'm glad you noticed my segue in there.
Yep.
It was very subtle.
Yeah. All of us have seen it over the break. It's a film. It's a film.
It's sadly a film that exists and we saw.
Yeah.
I mean, put it this way. I literally turned around to it, to Emily, in the cinema, at the end of the film, and said, see, this is why I prefer Star Trek.
Yeah, literally he said that to me. I mean, I've always tried to give Star Wars more of a chance than Paul, but at the same time, I'm not giving it a chance.
It's just it's just soap opera in space. It doesn't have the interesting sciencey stuff or the
But you know what? At least it had some good story going on in the previous episode.
Yeah, story that actually made sense to a certain extent,
and helped to drive development of the world and its characters. In sensical ways.
That's a mad idea.
That followed a kind of logic.
I can't see how that would work.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, I've heard that studio interference kind of made this worse than what it was meant to be.
Was the studio interference, we better make it what the fanboys want or else?
That and just kind of curbing J.J. Abrams' vision a bit, as it were.
Yeah, but his vision's always a bit dicey anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not convinced he has a vision.
But, I mean, it's a case of, I can believe Disney actually kind of doing this, where they're like, no, make it shorter. And, cut these scenes and that scenes and whatever. Because Disney.
You see, the thing with that is it would kind of give a lot of credit to J.J. Abrams. And I've watched other films of his. I've watched TV series of his.
I'm not saying that it would be, a brilliant film. if, you know, it was just J.J. Abrams in charge.
But
what I'm saying is that there's probably deleted scenes that would make the film a bit more bearable. A bit like X-Men 3, Last Stand, where it's like those deleted scenes that you took out would have made more sense than what you left in. It still wouldn't have been a great film. It just would have made more sense.
Would have made it perhaps at least mediocre at the end of the day. I think we should provide a link to one of the Curbing Rumours articles in the show notes. But also, I think one breakdown of the film that we must link to is the one by the Just Right YouTube channel. That was the one that we watched whilst we were particularly ill last week, that like actually looked at the script structure and stuff
that one, yeah, yeah.
Because it, like, if you'll think for yourself from a story perspective, oh, it was fine. And it's like, we were offended on two fronts. We were offended by the fact that the story...
The film offends me.
The story was actually kind of shit with what they built up with and the direction they decided to take. Spoilers. Much spoilers. At this point, if you don't want spoilers for this freaking thing, just... stop listening to this episode. It was nice. Have a great start to the new year. Bye. We'll talk to you next time. But warnings, spoilers. Okay, that's the end of the warnings. We're going into the spoilers. But freaking Rey being the granddaughter of Palpatine was just the stupidest decision ever. And like at one point, he either opted for IVF or he fucked someone. Both are scenarios that I cannot comprehend ever happening. Ever.
I mean, to be honest, it's that twist just seemed to come out of nowhere, and that's what frustrates me, because stories, even when there are big twists, unless there's like hints here and there, you know, throughout the series, you know, it feels cheap to turn around and say, okay, well, this thing exists, and this is a twist, and there's no way that you could have seen this coming because I didn't even fucking give any hints. And that's what it felt like.
That felt like a JJ twist,
yeah.
As in not a twist, not something as planned, just something he pulled out of his ass.
Yeah.
Another breakdown, the Screen Rant pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I saw. Where it's just, yeah, this seems entirely fair. So where did this thing go? That he made it, it went nowhere. What happened with this? Nothing whatsoever. Why did this happen? Because bang.
I mean, the film's, even if we ignore just story decisions like that, because that's a pure plot point decision,
yeah, yeah.
You know, Rey is related to Palpatine as a granddaughter. If we ignore that, it is the technical use of script writing and direction that led to this being portrayed. That's perhaps also one of the film's biggest issues, because technically, as a film, like as an actual film, it's... I mean, come on, we're looking at freaking Twilight levels of novel writing here, but as a film form, just with less padding. Actually, some
less
of it
sparkles.
Was padding, because they kept repeating, we have to go to a place to find the thing, to find the thing, we have to go to a place to find the thing, to find the thing, to find the thing. And I had a bit of a Lord of the Rings, taking the Hobbits to Isengard, kind of going through my head just then.
It was like Fetch Quests.
Yes, the movie. Fetch Quests,
yeah.
The movie.
But also the way that kind of Rey and Poe and Finn basically just kind of remained together throughout the film kind of meant that it was kind of one continuous path. There wasn't any like divergences or anything like that. So it was also not just a fetch quest, but also what's the term when you're guiding somebody along?
Bullshit.
I mean, that, it is
no, there's a technical term for the type of mission. Escort mission.
Yeah.
It was an escort mission as well.
And another term.
Only the most powerful
MacGuffins.
Person was the person that, you know, was like in the main quest. It's like that Finn and Poe kind of
the
didn't really do much.
The sidelining of Finn and Poe was fucking ridiculous.
The sidelining of every single character in favour of Rey and Kylo Ren randomly showing up all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, hey, I've just made you kill, you know, your Wookiee friend. No, it's okay. There was another transport which was entirely separate and we didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not, you know, that's not even hinted at. It's just, oh no, it turns out it's fine.
Yeah, but the fact that we were, it was so quickly there was that reversal meant that the whole, like, it had no emotional import. There was no point doing it because they did actually nothing with it.
Yeah. Oh no, I've killed Chewie. Oh no, it's fine. Oh, that's all right then.
Yeah, there was no impact because, you know, you do something like that and you just pull it out of your arse. You know, there's no weight to the moment at all. And, you know, I'd heard that he did that. So, you know, it wasn't a surprise, but my wife didn't. And she was just looking at me and go, why have they done that? He's obviously not dead. it had no weight to it. So the whole, oh, you know, no, you know, Chewbacca's fine. And you go, right, we didn't think he wasn't.
Yeah.
And, oh, right, so, you know, the reason you're there on the planet anyway is you're looking for a MacGuffin, which is a dagger that's got Sith writing on. How do they find this? By falling into a cave. With a heavy bit of foreshadowing, because Rey suddenly says, oh no, I can heal a giant alien snake.
Yes.
And then, you know, they go, oh, hang on, this is the sword, you know, no, this is the dagger.
Oh, don't forget, Rey also,
the Jedi Hunter.
But Rey also recreated the mouse and the lion. Is it an Aesop's fable where you've got the mouse that takes a thorn out of the lion's paw? And the lion doesn't eat the mouse because it's thankful for the fact that it removed the thorn. Only in this case, it's a freaking sword with a bunch of Sith writing on it.
You know. Yeah, it was just, what? Because it was clearly setting her up and go, look how pure she is. She's a good Jedi, isn't it? Nice.
Like,
and then, you know,
but also,
yeah,
like, people like Luke beforehand didn't need that kind of bullshit.
Exactly. That was one of the things that, you know, really pissed me off, because it's like, you know, why the hell are you doing this?
Like, Kylo Ren's clearly shown what's bad, and that's mostly in the mass murdering of people. Like, we know what the bad standard is for somebody who uses the Force.
Yeah.
It's pretty freaking clear in even this new trilogy.
And then also that scene where she's basically fighting against a Sith version of herself randomly for, like, less than a minute.
Because we had to put something in from the trailer need to be there.
It was about 10 seconds, wasn't it? And this was a point that, I saw made elsewhere. In the... you know, the casino sequence in, The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
You had the, you know, the reveal that basically the First Order and the, the New Republic were buying weapons and spaceships from pretty much the same people.
Yeah.
You know, the arms dealers were raking it in. They were, you know, hey, you know, we can sell you, you know, these things, or, you know, we can sell you those things. But, you know, either way, we win because, you know, we are the status quo. We're not going to go anywhere. And, you know, it was like, it comes to, you know, The Rise of Skywalker. Yes, Sith have pointed teeth, lol. And it's like, what? What?
And on the Sith planet, when all of the, you know, Star Destroyers, you know, just kind of rise up out of nowhere, and it's just like...
Yeah, apparently from IKEA Flat Park.
There were so many of them. And they were all crewed, and it's like, but the place was sort of secret, but they were all under... But it was like, the amount of resources involved was even more... unrealistic to think about than, like, just a regular Death Star.
I mean, that's the thing, you know, it's like a fucking anime battle at the end as well, where, you know, the stakes just cut, well, not even the stakes, actually, it was just basically the power levels of the characters get, like, higher and higher.
9,000!
Exactly, and it's just like, this is just, like, ludicrous, even by Star Wars standards. You know, I know they don't exactly define the Force, you know, apart from, like, Episode 1, but even so, that's just like, no, no. you're just pulling stuff out of your ass now.
You know what? The power of love, though. The power of love. The sudden smooching from unexpected sources. When at least we now have confirmed that Ben and Ray are not related. Thank goodness. Unexpected smooch from the murderous wanker.
You know what it is? I reckon that basically this film is fanfic from when on Spaceballs, when the helmet guy, can't remember his name, basically was playing with the figurines of himself and Princess Vespa. It's basically that.
But here's the thing. Even prior to this reveal, one of the biggest ships for the new trilogy has been Kylo and Rey in terms of straight ships. Yeah. Been one of the biggest ones, the one that I see post the most fanfic when I see friends who write it, posting it. And it's like, some will acknowledge that that's a good, bad situation on account of the fact that Kylo's like a murderous wanker. I say murderous, technically genocidal. Like he's complacent in a lot of mass killings.
I can see that, but I can also see ways that, you know, they could have had an arc for his character rather than, oh wait, I am good now.
Yeah.
He could have maybe realised that he'd made mistakes, but it was too late for him to be redeemed in any way, and then died, which is perhaps what should have happened.
And not to mention the fact that, you know, that the title of the film doesn't really make sense because, I mean, at the very, very, very end, she basically decides that she's a Skywalker. Out of nowhere, considering that Leia was actually Organa.
Yeah. And the Skywalker she had the most connections with, technically.
Look, do you mean Leia?
Leia
is the one that she had the most connections with. So taking Luke's name is just kind of a bit nonsensical.
Or is this her secretly saying that she's decided to marry Kylo in his death?
But even then, that would be Ben Solo. So she would be Rey Solo. Which doesn't fucking make sense!
Exactly. It's just, what? If she'd said Solo, at least that would have made, you know, a level of sense. I mean, the thing that annoys me is that JJ has clearly, you know, The Force Awakens. And, you know, people were going, oh, see what he's done? Ah, he's made a film that echoes, you know, the previous start of the, you know, previous trilogy. As in, you know, we don't talk of the prequels, basically. And, you know, so, you know, we'll do this. And then Johnson comes. Is it Johnson? No, Rian Johnson? Or am I completely getting that wrong?
I know it's Rian or something. Are you looking it up now?
Yeah, I'm.
Fair enough. That guy.
The guy that wrote the previous film.
The guy who did the other thing. You know, he, you know, threw lots of spanners in the works. Yeah, Rian Johnson. Thank God for that. And JJ's went, oh, never mind, I'll just completely ignore those things.
And when you say spanners, they're not spanners. They were means for interesting world and character development.
I'm just talking from the perspective of Abrams.
But it's not just Abrams. Like, loads of people who hated on Last Jedi, but really like Rise of Skywalker, said, you know, speak of Last Jedi like it had fucked things up. What fucks things up in the way that the film actually had, and the following film would actually have to work
at being a film. I massively preferred Last Jedi to... Mm. You know, The Force Awakens. I thought it was a much more interesting film. It had better dynamics. It made more sense. It took the character, you know, because people complaining about, you know, Luke being on the island. It's like, yeah, because Jedi Masters have never just, you know, removed themselves from everything, have they?
Luke's to Yoda. Well, his ghost at this point.
Obi-Wan Yoda. So, you know, yeah, they've never done that. Oh, wait, hang on. Yeah, exactly what they did. Exactly what they bloody did. And, you know, all these, you know, as I also said with the, you know, the casino planet, which, you know, I didn't like everything in The Last Jedi.
No, the casino planet was perhaps one of the weaker bits
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, but I liked some of the things that they did with that sequence, yeah. And I liked what they did with Rose, for example. I'm extremely pissed off. And, you know, the whole thing with, you know, Phasma, who was still lumbered with an awful name.
Yeah.
It's just utter shite, that name. But what I wish had happened was that, you know, well, first of all, I wish that, you know, Phasma had, you know, survived. And what you could have had was Kylo Ren going sort of semi-renegade in a sort of, you know, not dark side, not light side, but sort of, you know, grey, you know, dark grey.
Or his side, because that seemed to be an angle he was interested in that we didn't get.
Yeah. Well, one of the themes of the previous film.
He was just kind of there, wasn't he? He just sort of started doing things.
But one of the themes of the previous film was basically just tearing down history, what has come before. And that kind of, you know, that plot didn't really kind of come out at all.
In Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah. In fact, it was pretty much the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I was saying, with he's just went, you know, oh, Rian Johnson's really, you know, screwed things up for my basically just mirroring the original trilogy.
Yeah.
I, you know, plan. Well, that bollocks, I'll just completely ignore the bits I don't like and just say, oh, it was Palpatine all along. There we go. Don't need Snoke, it's fine. It's fine that you killed him. It's absolutely fine.
But then doing it so in such a way where you're basically... because I'm pretty sure that it was either inferred or, you know, actually referenced that that Snoke was basically just a clone of something. Because they had, like, you know, other Snokes there. And I was like, what? Is that meant to make sense? That this doesn't make sense, like, at all.
Because they seem to abandon the whole clone army thing ages ago.
But even then, Snoke is a Force user, so because they've never really dealt with actually cloning Force users before.
Mm.
They have been in the extended universe comics.
Okay.
There was actually a I can't remember the name of the series, but one I read where. This was before the prequels, so part of the, you know, they took the, you know, the Clone Wars, as had already been mentioned in the original trilogy, and one of the things they did was that the Emperor would clone himself and then use, you know, basically, you know, Sith techniques to, you know, possess the new clone. So
that was another thing that wound me up. Because, like, at the bottom of the, you know, thing where the Emperor's like, oh, yes, if you kill me, then I can put, you know, me and all the Sith can possess you and we can be reborn.
And right. So, well, that doesn't sound good.
No. So
I wouldn't want that.
So basically, they end up killing him and that didn't happen. And it was like, what?
But also, kind of like, in terms of trying to get somebody to fall through with your evil plan, like, you need to make it sound like a good deal. And I gotta say, Palpatine's negotiation skills have gotten worse over the course of films. Like, it was bad enough in the prequels talking to Anakin about how, like, you know, I think he was at risk of dying in birth, basically. But, like, that was a reasonably good negotiation tactic in terms of just, you know, putting the fear in Anakin. But, obviously...
And of course, the whole Emperor thing in Return of the Jedi, when he's trying to provoke Luke, at least that made sense.
But yeah, there was no sweetening of the offer here in Rise of Skywalker. Yeah,
it's like, kill me and you'll die because I'll possess you. No.
Okay, I won't kill you then. But that's not fair. I'm going to kill you.
Oh, God. Go on, please. Kill me. Go on. Press the big button that says incinerate an emperor. Go on, please.
I mean, can you just kill himself and forcibly possess someone at this point? Like, the fuck?
It's just and the whole thing about the Sith being like the entirety of the Sith being reborn and whatnot, and it's just like, this is just no. Meanwhile, there's a massive battle, you know, up above them, like directly above them, with fucking, you know, shrapnel and shit should be coming down and, you know, making it very, very difficult to have this, you know, conversation or even a fight. And there's just nothing.
Convo battle.
Yeah.
And who here has played KOTOR?
Knights of the Republic.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, not Knights of the Old Republic.
No.
Yeah. Where the plot of I can't remember if it was the first or the second. I do apologize to fellow Star Wars fans. but the plot of, I think it was the first one, was they had found the Star Forge, where it was like a big automated factory that the original Republic had used. And, you know, that's what had created, you know, a galaxy-wide civilization, because it could just, you know, pump out ships.
Right.
And it was being possessed by a Sith Lord in the game. And, you know, the final stages of the game were to, you know, defeat him and or join him.
Okay.
Since it was an RPG. And yeah. So, you know, the Star Forge was a thing that, so far as I know, still exists in, you know, the Star Wars universe. Or at least, you know, it's a reference thing that you can go back and steal. AJJ, that's how you seem to operate with, you know, film plots. But, you know, there was none of that. There was no mention of how this vast fleet was created, other than he's not been in the last two, so, he's had plenty of time.
But the thing is that it is literally a case of time and resources. And also the way they've just talked about the devastation of planets and shit. Like, question whether or not they've been able to recruit properly.
That references to another thing I was thinking of. There are several bits in this film where they mention things that have happened elsewhere. And you think, well, that could have been, you know, a very good part of the main plot line for this film. But you didn't bother, did you? So it's just ended up as a, you know, something, you know, as a character origin, like that rebel stormtrooper, that Finn meets. And she just, you know, she pretty casually says, oh, yes, it was me and the whole, you know, platoon of stormtroopers. We rebelled because we were, like, you know, captured, you know, children, and we were, you know, brainwashed. And when we got sent to, you know, slaughter innocents, you know, we all rebelled. Why wasn't that a plot line in this? Yeah. Because we saw that Finn had that situation as well, where he rebelled. So you could have had a stormtrooper rebellion. You could have had, you know, the First Order breaking down and splintering. And, you know, that whole thing with, Kylo Ren, he could have, maybe taken some of them. And it could have been you could have had a tug of force between, you know, the true believers of the First Order and Rey.
Yeah.
We're both offering him, you could join us and make things better.
But also, they could have then had some even nicer tiebacks to Force Awakens.
Like, yeah.
With the whole thing that happened there with Finn. It's like...
I just think it's a really bad... I will let you continue, but it's just while I remember this bit. I just think it's a really bad example of, well, any film, any fiction, when the first thing that you do to come out of it is you start making a better one in your head or just in conversation with your significant other.
I mean, let's just face it, there's going to be better written fanfic that fix it, as it's called.
Hell yes. I've already read... well, yeah, diagnosis would be the best word. You know, diagnosis dissection of, this film, where it's much better thought out than pretty much anything that's in this. Things happen. There are lots of things happening. There are explosions. There's, you know, things, you know, presented as, oh, no, this is a bad thing. Oh, it turns out it didn't happen. Because not only, you know, Chewie, oh, no, Chewie's blown up. No, he escaped on another ship that we didn't show reasons. Oh no, C-3PO is going to get his memory wiped. Oh, it turns out R2-D2 has a backup. It's fine.
But can we... Okay, can we just talk about the C-3PO memory debacle of Fetch Quest? That is...
Well, yeah, that was a game mission, wasn't it?
It was just so ridiculous. Oh, I can't actively translate it.
What does it say then? Oh, I can't. I can't say what it translates. I can read it, though.
It's like, but the solution is to... What? Like, it's the most ridiculous thing. But also, they could have probably... I mean, Christ, like...
The solution was to, you know, hack into his BIOS, hold down F8 while he reboots, and select Sith DOS.
Yeah.
Hence the red eyes. Did you notice that as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's translating Sith shit, so his eyes have to glow red. Why do his eyes have to glow red? Because the Sith are bad. They have pointed teeth, you see.
Because obviously we haven't figured this out yet, so we just gotta emphasize that. It's for the little ones, you know.
I mean, you know, for all the flaws, you know, that we've talked about previously, and Jesus, there are many, you know, of the prequels.
Yeah.
At least they had a, you know, beginning, middle, and end.
Yep.
And narratively, they made sense. They were just very badly told.
Yep.
I just realised, because, I mean, it's always been claimed that, you know, the Star Wars universe is fucked up anyway, because Han Solo originally thought that the Jedi was like a, you know, ancient myth or religion type thing. But if there were like Sith languages in like a kind of central database that was downloaded to C-3PO.
But we've got to remember that the language was marked as naughty, so Space Santa would not deliver presents.
But by the same token, I mean, you'd imagine that people would know of the language, at least.
I mean...
This is referenced more in the Expanded Universe and in, you know, stuff like the Knights of the Old Republic, where in one of the games you visit a Sith temple, and you know they've got their own thing. They've got their own religion and their own explanation for everything, and their own hierarchy of how to deal with initiates and forbidden knowledge. So I could kind of accept you can read Sith, but there's a lock against translating it. So I can kind of understand that, but. Not with the, no, I can't, you know, I can't say it at all, but there's a way to get me to say it.
I
wanted to criticise the writing for a minute.
Sure. Another thing that pissed me off was basically how they dealt with the character of, was it Hux? And basically having him like as a...
As a
double agent, like a traitor type thing, because he doesn't like Kylo Ren, and then... No more development is given to him because he basically just gets shot there and then. And not even in a kind of like, you know, I'm helping you to escape kind of way. It was more of a kind of, I'm helping you to escape. Haha, aren't I so clever? Bang. Yeah, he was obviously a traitor.
Yeah, that was absolute bullshit. Again, you could have had him, having the real vendetta against Kylo Ren if Kylo Ren had left.
Hmm.
And not welded his mask together, which he'd, destroyed in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
That, to me, was this is how it's going to go. JJ is upset that, one of his toys got, that he wrote about, got smashed up.
Mm.
So, it doesn't matter because Kylo Ren has kept all the pieces and he's just putting it back together. And go, why? Because that's his mask. Shut up. Leave me alone. Shut up. That was a great. We've got someone who looks a bit like Hux, but he's older, and people recognise him, and he's got a plummy English accent. So let's have Richard E. Grant in a Star Wars film, because it is almost like he didn't like what had happened to Hux in The Last Jedi, so he just decided to kill him off and replace him with a slightly older version. because there was nothing, you know, that was you know, specific about Richard E. Grant's character, who I can't even remember the name of, that you couldn't just have not bothered casting him and had Hooks do all that.
But I mean, part of the issue was also to do with the fact that obviously this brand new character, who was, you know, Richard E. Grant, also knew about and worked for directly for the Emperor, something that Kylo Ren didn't even, you know was alive.
But also, this means that he was able to guard his mind enough that Kylo Ren couldn't detect this bullshit.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Now, can I just...
The reasoning for that is why? Yeah. Shut up.
I just want to talk about, like, I think it's slightly telling that if we consider, okay, so this episode was written between J.J. Abrams and Chris Terrio, if that's how you pronounce his surname. What is worrying about Chris is that other than Argo, which is a film I quite enjoy and can easily rewatch, his other film writing credits, the most notable ones, include Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, Justice League, and Justice League Part 2. So, like, what the fuck? Meanwhile, Rian Johnson has at least written three pretty good films, if you ignore the fanboys who cry over The Last Jedi. Because technically, as a film, The Last Jedi works, the script works. But he wrote... Looper.
Which was very good.
Yeah, he wrote, obviously, Star Wars, but he also wrote Knives Out, which we also saw over the holidays, and it was good.
Yeah.
The only thing I've heard about that, other than it's good, is Captain America in a sweater.
Oh, yeah.
But he's not Captain America.
But he's still got America's ass.
And the suggestion that Daniel Craig... just continues as different roles in sequels that come out for this, just doing a different accent every time. I presume I'll get that when I watch it.
I would like to explain my laugh. Whilst Paul was making a show note for Knives Out, instead of writing Knives Out, he wrote Knives Ass.
That was because of you saying that he still has America's ass. And I was, partly writing the title Knives Out, but then when you said ass, it entered my head. Your ass entered into my head, and I wrote it down, and Knives' ass...
This is not Nerds After Dark.
In there.
It's not Nerds After Dark. So anyway, I think we need to bring this pulling apart of Rise of Skywalker to some kind of end.
But yeah, because otherwise we're just going to basically isolate a load of... Well, no, saying that, I mean, we've noticed that...
It's a 50-50 split.
But we've noticed that, in general, people who like... Last Jedi,
and we're fond of Force Awakens as well.
Yeah. Kind of dislike, at least to a certain extent, Rise of Skywalker. People who liked Rise of Skywalker in general weren't too fond of The Last Jedi. Obviously, there's going to be like some overlap in that Venn diagram, but on the whole, I think it's kind of telling.
Oh, other bits that we haven't covered that we should briefly, though. The pathetic same couple kiss in the background.
Oh, yes, yes.
The fact that...
Which I missed.
I saw it, but I blinked and it was gone, kind of thing.
I mean, to be fair, at least it wasn't hyped up like, what was it, Star Trek 3, where they were like, Sulu's kind of gay in this one, and, you know, it doesn't even hold hands, I can't remember whether he kisses his
partner.
And
they got a kid.
But, yes, and basically, like, hand on the back type thing. But,
And so there was that, and then there was the fact that, actually, at the end of the day, if you've got a bunch of Star Destroyers that can't leave a planet's surface for some stupid MacGuffin reason.
Can I just say as well? Star Destroyers with dongs.
Yeah.
Planet destroying dongs.
Yeah. Those destroyers. You can equally have a MacGuffin where you don't actually need a whole load of potential rebels to show up to try and kick the shit out of them. You just take control of one of those fucking things and use it to blow up everything anyway. What's the point? Like, at no point did anyone make a serious effort to take over the control deck of one of those.
Yeah. Which, like, considering you had a whole load of apparently rebel ex-stormtroopers, then, you know,
like they
that,
didn't,
that
they,
could
they
have been a thing.
They didn't have to do the complete bombastic thing. And also, actually, just the fact that, oh, the previous film, trying to call on help from the rest of the galaxy, freaking failed. But this time, it somehow worked because Lando mysteriously turns up and blah, blah, blah. Because
obviously, Leia wasn't a good enough, you know, person to rally behind before.
So, yeah. So, fuck Rise of Skywalker. Yeah. It may end up being like Batman. Which is the third Batman film by Nolan?
Oh, Dark Knight Rises, is it?
Yeah, Batman Dark Knight Rises. I may never watch it again. I haven't watched.
I think that there is kind of this issue with like the third in like trilogies, where basically they kind of build it up and build it up and build it up, and they don't know how to pay it off decently.
Yep.
Because, I mean, there's
a
lot
of
trilogies.
That was a very definite sense I got.
Sorry?
That was a very definite sense I got about Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah. But there's just this thing about trilogies where the third one is always like a... No.
Anyway, due to how long we've been talking and stuff, I'm afraid, guys, that we can only pick one thing each to talk about we've been up to.
Oh,
sorry.
Blimey. I've got to think about
Paul,
mine.
You
I've
need
got
to think.
I think,
okay,
I think I should stage some kind of rebellion to that.
No, you're not calling in for backup. It's one thing. Retroid.
Hang on, I'm reminding me. I'm looking at the notes again. Right, well, not that, because it was a bit crap. That was quite good. Damn. I've got a quandary now. There's three good things. It all depends. Have you lot watched The Mandalorian?
No.
Nope.
Because we don't use Dave Internet to help with stuff that much.
I mean, to be honest, I've even heard that was it one of the main guy from The Mandalorian was a bit like disappointed with Rise of Skywalker.
I also want to point out that we've talked enough about Star Wars this episode.
Yeah, I know, but and I think I'm pretty sure that several of the main stars have kind of turned around and said it's not as good as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Well, I will technically break the rules, but only by saying that The Mandalorian is exactly what I wanted from a Star Wars series. You can tell that everyone writing for it is just obsessive about, you know, the fiction of, you know, the whole Star Wars, you know, worlds, plural.
So they care, is that what you're saying?
Yes, it feels, this is the crucial thing, it feels like the original trilogy Star Wars. There are, so far as I know, no Jedi. But yeah,
it just
I'm not saying.
Okay.
It's just nicely expanding on a group of people that you know you've heard about if you played the games and if you watch the films, because I'm pretty sure the Mandalorians get, you know, mentioned. But yeah, and also Boba Fett was not a Mandalorian. He just wore Mandalorian armor. There you go, technicality.
Hmm.
Now, have you lot seen Watchmen?
Yes. What? As in the TV series, yes.
Yes. So shall we discuss that?
Only briefly. But is that your pick?
see that's the thing. Between Witcher and Watchmen, which of the two W's would you want to discuss?
I kind of want to discuss both.
Well,
of them could be mine.
Yeah, sorry, Retroid.
Okay, no, that's fine. In that case, I will pick Watchmen.
Okay.
When I heard that David Lindoff,
yeah.
Is that his name?
I think so.
Was developing it. A long-term, JJ, collaborator and worked on things like, Prometheus and Lost and you know a few JJ TV series. I was nervous. It's like, don't fuck this up. Seriously, don't fuck this up. But I have to say, having now gorged the delicious feast that is Watchmen, it's like, blimey, you have actually made what I wanted from a Watchmen series while being original and set after the graphic novel.
I have to admit, it took me a while to get into the Watchmen series, but towards the end, it was just like, oh. Ooh.
It just sort of fit together, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's like,
properly planned.
Okay, you're doing the whole world building thing. That's fine, that's okay. But I am glad that I chose to wait until all the episodes were available.
That's fair.
Because, I could not watch that weekly. It would have driven me a bit mad.
I think it probably would have caused you to probably drop off. If it wasn't just like, binged.
Yeah, it kind of went back to the original source material, like the big world unifying attack.
Yeah,
was not Dr. Manhattan; it was the giant squid. The giant psychic squid dropped on New York, and that is referenced. And I really liked what they did with that, with the character Glass. The cop.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Where he was absolutely fine. He just slept in a bunker and had lots of, security for extra-dimensional... that was it, wasn't it? It was EDS. It was extra-dimensional security. So the whole idea was that, they would detect if there was going to be another, massive giant psychic squid. And the alarm would go off and he'd be able to hide in the bunker from it. And, as revealed, the character of Glass is, he's a cop. And, just as a bit of a, thing for, listeners, the cops are masked because the whole idea is that there's, a danger from, vigilantism. So that, basically the police don't, kind of technically don't exist, but they're all leading a secret identity and wearing yellow masks in public, so no one knows who they actually are. And one of the senior cops in the area, he calls himself Glass, and he's like a people reader, and he just wears a transparent, well, not transparent, completely reflective, mask over his head.
The mask doesn't remind me a little bit of the full head masks for something like a morph suit.
Mm.
Hmm.
Only obviously a different material to what you normally see morph suits in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as you find out in the series, the reason he's wearing that stuff is that it's sold as protection against psychic, blasts, which was, what the octopus did and killed 3 million. Yes, sorry. Ah, cephalopods are all the same. basically he's portrayed as this, hard ass, character. But as the series progresses, it is shown that he is actually, still deeply damaged by, this attack that happened in New York. And then, of course, he finds out who is behind the attack, which if you've read the graphic novel, is Ozymandias, yeah. Who is one of the the masked heroes, and it all ties together rather nicely, and I'm not going to spoil any of it.
Okay.
It is excellent. When it you can either watch it all in one lot on like Now TV because it was on Sky Atlantic.
Yeah.
Or wait until it's on Blu-ray and then just feast and gorge.
Okay, Paul, what have you been up to? What's the one thing? Are you going to go with The Witcher?
Yes, The Witcher.
The one thing.
The one thing.
The one thing you're allowed to.
Yes, one thing.
Well, yeah, I'm going to go for The Witcher. So at first I wasn't 100% sure, about it. But
we,
then
I think we should talk about how we started watching it.
Oh, over at
our friends.
Yes, because that was before Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, we started watching it over at our friends, and like by the time we'd kind of got about 3 episodes in, we had to obviously come back, and we're like, actually that was kind of interesting. I do kind of want to watch that. It did feel a bit at times like replacement Game of Thrones.
That was what Netflix pitched it as when they were saying that they were developing it.
And that's partly because of the brutality, partly because the
fantasy setting.
Yes, but also partly because of the sex. The fucking.
Yeah.
There's lots of fucking.
To quote, they're alive. Oh God, they're alive.
To paraphrase, you can tell by basically the state of the internet that everybody is obsessed with that song. You know that song.
Valley of Plenty. Oh, Valley of Plenty. I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, considering that when it was first announced that Henry Cavill's casting was sending everybody like, he can't be the Witcher. Oh, that's terrible. It's got to be ridiculous. Oh, no, that's terrible. Actually, he's pretty good in it. Pretty convincing.
That is the thing. Now, you see, I have not, just handing in my gamer badge and gamer gun here. I have not played the Witcher's games.
Neither have I.
But my wife has, and she absolutely loves them. She's got several replays of each one. So let's just say I am familiar with the game world and setting and, quite a lot of the characters. And I'm kind of about, Henry Cavill. She doesn't like him.
Okay.
So when it came out, they're doing a TV series based on, The Witcher, Henry Cavill to play Geralt.
Oh, she must have been devastated.
She was... Yeah, I was looking forward to watching the series. She was not looking forward to watching the series. She was, I will watch this, but I will be judging. And it's fair to say that it won her over quite quickly.
Oh, that's good.
So that's a good thing. See, that's the thing. If you can have a predetermined opinion of something, if you've heard good or bad, or you don't not like the people involved.
Yeah.
What my example would be with Watchmen. I wasn't sure about a sequel with David Lindelof.
Yeah.
Writing, but it's like, okay, no, I take that back. He has done well with that. And, with Witcher, it's like, yeah, we both really enjoyed it. And, my wife loved it. Because she was, are we watching the next episode? And it's like, it's 2 a.m. Are we watching the next episode? It's over Christmas and New Year's. It's like, come on, are we watching? Yeah. Okay, apparently we're watching another episode. So, good, very good sign. And it's
I mean, the one thing that I will say is that it kind of got a bit confusing after a while, because you kind of got a certain amount of episodes in and you're like, hold on a minute, they're referencing stuff from the past episode as like a decade ago. What the fuck? There's a time jump? And then it's like later on in the season again, it's like, wait, this, I remember this from the beginning. What the hell?
Yeah, what? Because hang on, those people are dead. But I mean, to be fair, that only takes, about 2 or 3 episodes? For you to go, oh, hang on, these are clearly not happening at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. This is not like a sequential thing. This is like a...
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of really, really an odd choice, because there was kind of that parallel editing in the first episode where the Witcher is doing something in a different space, in a different location, seemingly happening at the same time as this other event. And then later on, you find out that he was actually there at event. And it's like, wait a minute, that's confusing. That felt a little bit cheaty to me.
He wasn't in the same. He wasn't in those sequences though. The ones that were end. He wasn't in the Nilfgaard attack, was he? In the first episode, he was mentioned.
But
and it's the
But the way that it was edited,
Siri to...
the way that it was edited was that he was in a different location. So when you're kind of editing two scenes together, it's kind of implied that they are a different location, but the same time.
I see what, I can see what you mean there, but you know, they didn't show him in the two timelines.
Oh, no, no. So,
you know, they did keep them studiously separated. Yeah. And what I can get why they wanted a, you know, this is a beginning and this is, and also an end.
Mm.
And to, you know, tie together the, you know, storylines, because after all, as my wife pointed out, the first episode is basically Geralt's low point. Because he's, you know, he fucks up. Things go south. And, you know, that town hates him.
Mm.
So that's kind of, you know, referenced later on. And, but it's just the, you know, you've got Geralt not doing a brilliant job of dealing with the situation in, you know, in this small town.
Mm.
And then you've got royalty saying, no, you've got to get the, you know, Ciri to, you know, Geralt, you know, the Witcher of Rivia.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've kind of got the, he's not doing great, but no, he is, you know, he's very good, and, you know, get him, you know, involved. And yeah, I very quickly caught on with the timeline, but I thought, yeah, I'm not sure how, you know, some other people will, you know, grasp the timeline, because it's not a conventional way of doing a series, is it?
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not. But it is enjoyable. Very, very much enjoyable. And some kind of interesting characters. So, yeah. And that bard. A bard that just follows him round.
Yeah. He was very good. I expected to, you know, because I knew of the dandelion character in the games.
Mm.
And of course, he looks quite different in, you know, in the series. He's, for a start, he's Jeskier. And I think that means something like yellow flower, which is why you got the name dandelion in.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah. And what part of his name means yellow flower?
Hmm.
So, you know, that's where that comes in.
There's one thing I want to put out. When they announced the original casting for Henry Cavill as Geralt, there was a lot of outcry over it. A lot of people saying he was completely unsuited to the role. He wasn't the right choice. He was too young, and so on and so on and so on.
Mm.
But having watched the series, I can't imagine anyone else as the character in a TV series.
He worked really well. And apparently he was a fan of the games as well.
Yeah, I have heard
that. And you can see that, because he does channel the original voice actor. You know, with the Geralt grunt. So, yeah, overall, it was, that was one of the series, that was one of the Netflix series that, you know, I really enjoyed, that was released over that time, unlike Lost in Space.
Lost in Space, just watching through the first two episodes just before recording, I'm not sure whether it's me or just, like, I'm distracted or whatnot, but I think half the time I was actually on my phone, just being, like, looking up every now and again. It's like, oh, okay, they're doing that, okay. And then
that's always the bad sign, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the issue is that they try and be clever, and they try and kind of dish out the XP almost for, like, solving issues, because they've always kind of got issues kind of coming on, and, you know, every now and again one character will be like, oh yes, we can do this, oh good idea, and then another character will be like, oh, we can do this, good idea, and whatnot. But there's just certain bits where it's like, hold on, they would have known that already because of such and such.
Is this Lost in Space?
Yeah, because there's, without kind of giving too much away, there's one bit where, I think in the first episode, where they're trying to take off from the planet, and, they're not trying to take off from the planet, they're trying to reach a thunderstorm out to sea to basically get the power in order to whatnot, and you know, it kind of looks like, you know, just kind of a sea, and I probably would have been, well, my first reaction was because there's like this kind of almost like a ditch, like in the middle, going across, that was like sunken, almost like somebody had parted the sea. And yeah. I was like, well, the flow of water would have been constantly kind of draining outwards to it. So I would have been a bit suspicious that if you've got, like, you know, a sea and there's not like waves coming up and going back and coming up and going back, that there would have been something dragging the water out. So they kind of would have been, you know, kind of, they would have already known about that. It wouldn't have been so much of a surprise. And it's like, stuff like that.
Yeah, the whole thing with Lost in Space is, I came to this conclusion with the second season, and I can already feel Emily's glaring. With the, he's mentioned another thing. He's bloody mentioned it, but it performs, you know, one of the great sins that, you know, that really gets on my nerves with, well, you know, with any writing where, you know, the whole. You know, I've heard so many of, oh, but they, you know, they do these clever things. You know, their characters are clever. No, the characters are frequently dumb as hell. Mm. They just know clever things, apparently, when it's pertinent.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the characters are stupid and they've done stupid things. And when they find themselves in trouble, and it's not directly because of something stupid that they've just done, it's because of something stupid that they've done in the past.
I think at this point, because before Emily starts clawing at me, I think Emily needs to go for her one thing.
Yeah, there is one thing, you buggers.
Hey, it wasn't me that brought that one up.
And I'd like to point out that Paul Prime there spoke significantly longer about Lost in Space than I did.
I
believe that's called a technicality.
Whilst ill with food poisoning and not really capable of doing much because I felt so freaking rotten, I decided that I'd try and catch up with some of the Dresden Files books by Jim Butcher. I'd started reading it the series several years ago, and I was about three quarters of the way through Death Masks, which is the, I'm just counting, one, two, three, four, the fifth book in the series. Finished that, and then I already had Blood Rites bought and downloaded, which was the sixth book, and devoured that whilst being ill. And then started reading the seventh book in the series, Deadbeat. So I've basically, even though I have like two Stephen King novels on the go, I've gone in heavily for Dresden Files at the moment. There hasn't been like a normal novel of it published for a little while by the looks of things. There are a lot of books. It's quite a long series. But it's an interesting series to keep coming back to because there's a lot of character development that happens between the novels. Like, because he actually is like a wizard in like his 20s or something. And he's obviously like, and maybe early 30s, but he's not old, you know, no older than that. And he's just kind of developing, you know, you can see the character maturing as the books go on and stuff. However, whenever Jim Butcher writes a romantic liaison in the books, I do sometimes cringe because, like, I get that he wants to show romantic interest between Harry. And usually female characters. However, it's not a fade to black moment.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of detail, not tons of detail, but
does the special music get put on?
It's like a 15 rated film, but that happens to have sex in it. That kind of level of detail.
So every now and again, you may be able to see a nipple.
Yeah, or the description of. Parts feeling very part-like.
Park-like.
But yeah, someone,
I'm sorry, that just was it. Yeah. I can't be blamed for that, sure.
There was some massive revelations for the character in Blood Rites, the book previous to the one I'm reading at the minute, which I didn't see coming, but made some sense. and currently in Deadbeat, there's a whole necromancy thing going on, which isn't a topic that's like been hugely covered in quite a... I mean, there's like a lot of magic stuff like discussed in the books because it's kind of like a low urban fantasy kind of thing. Basically, you've got like magic and creatures and shit are like real, and they kind of gel with our world. And most people ignore what they see if they do see something supernatural. Unless, of course, they get eaten or killed by it, in which case, well, they're not alive to care anyway.
Or they had a really bad camera from the 1970s.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's a series that's still worth reading if you get the chance, but there's a lot of books. It's like, yeah, like more than 10. And plus, like, some sort of side short story ones, and there's some graphic novels as well.
Mm.
So, yeah. Yeah. That's my thing.
Short and sweet.
Mm. Yeah. So that is all we've got time for in this episode.
Okay.
So it's good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm retroid on Eurogamer.net and super retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blurt. I'm on Twitter, @PaulBlurt.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter @EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also listen to us on services like Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and Pocket Casts and stuff. You can also follow us on like Twitter @NerdsPodcast, and you can find us on Facebook @NerdsAssemblePodcast. So that's it. Good night.
Good night.
Goodbye. Do it.